system. I find you in the shows and moving are great. And being a nerd, the sign system is everywhere you go.
Da 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 da, believe it or not, George isn't at home. Please leave a message at the beep. I must be out or I pick up the phone. Where could I be? Believe it or not, I'm not home.
Wow. That is well done.
That's a callback to George Costanza's answering machine from an episode of Seinfeld in the 90s. Good morning, PJ.
You know, I never got into Seinfeld. Hi, good morning. I never got into Seinfeld.
Seinfeld's a good one. It's a good light viewing. Used to be appointment viewing, but that was back when we were in the business of streaming. We are no longer in the business of streaming. But good morning, PJ. It's a Friday morning. How are you doing?
Good morning. I'm doing all right. I'm hanging in there. Yourself?
Good. Yeah, we don't do these typically on Friday, so it's almost like getting on your calendar, PJ, at the end of the week, 4 p.m. meeting. Hopefully, we have a little bit of spunk, a little bit of energy here. It's in the Sterling.
Yeah, I'm a little bit more sprightly today than I typically am. We'll see what that means for the podcast. How about yourself? How are you doing? From an energy standpoint.
Oh, my energy. Full disclosure in terms of personal goodies, I'll be going on pat leave, having our second child. So by the time this makes it into the world, I would be taking a long-awaited fishing break. But the podcast will keep coming, so we'll figure out how we could jump on and chat design systems, you know, from time to time. Things are good. Things are good. I'm alive.
Yeah, I actually am really looking forward to talking design systems with you when you have half an hour of sleep for the last 3 days. I think it'll lead to some very entertaining discussions. Or just don't do that and just take the break, and we can do it later once you're in a more relaxed place.
Yeah, that leads to our topic today, which is a good segue on automation and help us do our jobs better. Like what mechanisms we've leveraged in terms of automation or tooling automation that has helped us do our design system management, product ownership, maintenance, how we do that better. And I'm going to lean on PJ on this one because he's done significantly a lot more in terms of automation and a lot of custom work internally at Pinterest. So yeah, that's just open the door and talk about what sorts of automation have you seen at Pinterest that's been successful for you, and where you would like to go.
Yeah, we've built a ton of plugins at Pinterest, many of them mainly in the proof of concept phase. I think you'll kind of get to one of the biggest challenge of automation is the unforeseen expense of maintaining these things. But in the way back day, building plugins for Sketch was challenging at best, right? Because whenever that Sketch application would update, so too would effectively the API for plugins. So your plugins were constantly breaking or buggy, and it was, you know, update comes and it's hold on to your butts. Is our plugin going to work? And then you're scrambling to try to get it to work. So it was never really as feasible of solution to incur the cost of maintaining plugins for Sketch. That all changed with Figma when they took a different approach where the API was versioned. And so if you, I'm getting into the weeds, but like in your plugin manifest, you say, I want to use this version of the API, which would never change. And it's a little more fuzzy nowadays with it, but for the most part, it's a much more stable platform. All that being said, what that's meant is that it's unlocked teams to more cost-effectively build automation for specifically for them to solve their problems, which is a new opportunity and really exciting for design orgs to get into tooling and automation for everyday mundane tasks. And so we've put a lot of time into it in design systems, but we have limited resources. I think that there's a real case to have teams just focused on this to build and maintain tooling to help designers work and deliver more effectively. So I would not be surprised if larger companies, you know, like the Facebooks and the Googles, at that scale, not that Google uses Figma, I have no idea, but having teams just focus in on, hey, if we can remove an extra 15 minutes out of a designer's day at the scale of some of these companies, that's going to equate to some real value. It doesn't take much time savings at that size to really equate to some serious dollar signs. So I think it's a growing field, and I think we're going to see a lot more investment from companies in this space in the years to come.
Yeah, I think you hit it spot on there. When I came to Meta, I discovered there's a specific a design infrastructure team that manages in-house private plugin that does any number of things. So I think what we had talked about that would be super useful, that I think is fairly simple to build, would be plugins that handle things that we would want to check before we hand off or deliver work to engineering. So things like linting capabilities, making sure that things are tied to tokens and styles in the system, making sure that accessibility in terms of color contrast is hit to whether you want it to hit AA or AAA, being able to spec that out. I'd love to get further investment onto file hygiene, linting, and we've talked a little bit about file hygiene, but being able to quickly rename layers, quickly be able to spec out layer naming, maybe add props to documentation, any number of things to help display what we're actually doing, all the voodoo that we're doing with auto layout variant and all that shit, and documenting that into something that is more feasible for designers and engineers to consume. But it all comes back to removing friction and removing clicks for designers. And I do think that, like you said, if this saves a designer 15 minutes today, it's just over the course of a year, it could save a designer days. And a lot of the low-hanging fruit, I would say, in terms of some of the plugins that could be built, could save one designer days. And then if you have a team of 5 to 10 people, that's weeks of time that you could save. The interesting thing that you and I talked about, I believe we talked about it on the podcast a little bit, was trying to tie in some automation with documentation and how you could get a private documentation site to talk to Figma, vice versa. Those are very interesting concepts. The headless CMS concept is very interesting, and thinking about managing content in general and then feeding that into live content into Figma. And I like to use the word hydrating. So being able to hydrate your design artifacts with the real life data is extremely intriguing to me, and removes the lift of not only string management for designers, but also designing for longer strings. It builds it in automatically.
There's just so much. There's so much you can do. I think you talk about hygiene, and when I hear that word, and trying to get a whole design org bought in, all I think of is the logistics of training, providing resources, coming up with what that standard is, getting buy-in, and governance. That in and of itself is a boatload of work. And then imagine if you want to change the rules. Can you imagine how much pain and suffering that would cause? All right, let's retrain everyone, get everyone up to speed. It's nearly impossible. The value of something like automation is it can remove that layer to where you have a level of agility of, hey, today we want our hygiene rules to be XYZ, but you know what? The land, you know, things have changed, priorities have changed, our viewpoint has changed. We're going to change those rules. If you have tooling and automation that's handling 80 to 90% of it for you, you have the opportunity to adjust those roles without massive impact to everyone around you and just general pain. I think that's one of the big things that's also ignored is just the comms associated with anything that's training or human based is massive. And even just the fact that people can misunderstand, people can misinterpret, opens up a layer of ambiguity and squishiness. If something is enforced with hard, explicit rules that come with automation, if you build it right, it's just always going to be that way, full stop. And that injects a level of continuity and consistency across an org that can be extremely difficult, if not impossible, at the scale of, say, of Facebook. If you got three designers, do not build automation. Or I mean, like, be very careful. Like, you're not going to see the same level of value that you're going to see if it was 3,000. At 3,000, I almost think it's a necessity if you want to have some level of company-wide continuity and standards. And so I think it's there is that threshold. I don't know what that is. There's probably a mathematical equation to be able to determine where, you know, where and when and how you should implement automation. But yeah, but at a certain point, it's almost an imperative. And given that we actually have the platforms to do it nowadays, it's a no-brainer.
Yeah, there's a lot of, I think, resetting expectations from my point of view. Like, I have a very specific way that I like to work, and I've promoted that on my teams, like even as much as how to set up a file, but then also how to set up like a template to present work. And yes, you could create a template and then just duplicate them, and that's like some form of automation, but you can think a little bigger and like remove the fuzziness of the manual parts of duplicating things from one thing to another by getting some design infrastructure help and creating rules and then establishing like a framework to generate files, for instance, automatically. Or at Disney, we had a very, very difficult to teach, I would say, a file naming structure that had a 3-digit code that had a platform name in there and then had a semantic descriptive name. And the 3-digit code referenced, for example, it would say, we'd say platform web dot 01 would be like the feature, 10 would be another feature, 20 would be another feature. And then the flow would be the second digit. And then the screen would be the third digit. Something like that should be automated based on how you tag the screen in the tool. We could do this much easier, but we did this manually for thousands of screens. And obviously there is like some magic, a voodoo tribe that was able to figure this out and execute this, but it wasn't tenable outside of the few people that knew how to do it. So something like that, I think, could be extremely automated. And you just create the rules, right? You create the rules and the guidelines to how something would generate. And then each frame that you do, it could sort of add sequentially that number.
Yeah. That's why systems and automation are like peanut butter and jelly, because what are systems if not a set of rules and models? And, you know, what is automation if not dependent on rules and models to implement? And so the two really do go hand in hand. And the other benefit is if you're renaming thousands of artboards or frames, I'll bet the farm that people made mistakes, because we are human beings and we make mistakes all the time. And so if we want to set up humans to fail, just give them a task with highly detailed, nuanced rules and then ask them to do it correctly thousands of times. It's just, you're going to make mistakes. It's human nature. and to expect otherwise seems silly. Whereas if you can rely on silicone or silicon, not silicone, wrong topic, silicon to actually to run those roles and to handle those things, I think everyone's going to end up with a happier place.
Yeah, I'm just picturing PJ like going to the physical world where Gestalt lives and like, ah, shit, there's a crack. Let me cock this. Ah, the cock is all over my hands. So and so.
Those are just my weekends, man.
Aisha, get me. I need another tube of cock.
Yeah,
please.
DIY. Oh, geez.
Then Aisha comes and, because she's a design technologist, does it way better than PJ does.
You can basically sum up. Aisha comes and fill in the blank does it better than PJ. That's pretty much a hard and fast rule. She's always going to do whatever better than myself.
Speaking of design technologist, that was, I think, another mechanism to get design infrastructure in at Disney. And I see some of that at Meta. I'm not as in tune yet with the design technology workspace here, but getting a design technologist at Disney, we were able to sort of dig into something, dig into TypeScript, which is what the Figma plugins is based out of. And what we were doing was trying to build an understanding of what were pain points for us, or maybe not even hard and fast pain points, but what did we do that took a long time that could be done in a smarter, more efficient way that is extremely repeatable. So that's what I think all of this. So when I think of automation, it's just handling bulk repeatable tasks in a very simple fashion.
Yeah. I think, you know, if a task does not require critical thinking and some level of intuition and expertise, it is a prime candidate for automation. And in my view, eventually will be automated. It's just the general rule is if something is manual and just turned in a crank, eventually just human nature, you know, through the history of human nature, it will be automated. And even if it's of a slightly less level of quality, if it's orders of magnitude more efficient, typically people will take that sacrifice. They'll take that trade-off. That's typically how we're approaching it as well. You know, one example is trying to keep all of our components, all the styles right, there are hundreds of thousands of layers that potentially have styles, and to expect someone to get that right every single time is not okay. And so we're building tools to run through a design, run through every layer, check its style, make sure there is a style there if there's supposed to be one, and then that it's the right style.
Yeah, that's the simplest use case, right? I know exactly how designers used to do it. They'll say, oh, this is, I have a typeface that's 12. Let me go and pick and choose which one, like, this may look like. Oh, there's no 12. Like, PJ, will you create it? No, of course not. Oh, let me change it just to 13. That's the closest one. So instead of using type semantically and how it should be used, they're picking whatever is closest to what is in their ideation file. But what you explained is in the simplest form, you could use automation to suggest, oh, this is 12 over, you know, 1.25. The style over here is also 12 by 1.25, or maybe it's 12 by 1.35. Would you like to switch it to the style? And we'd say, yes, yeah.
And I would argue, funny enough, I would even, my suggestion is not even ask. Just do it. Because if it has no material impact to the designer, asking them is a job in and of itself. Now are you going to ask every single time? Like, it could be hundreds of thousands, it could be thousands of examples. And so our approach has been, if we can guarantee there's no material impact to the designer, then we just do it. And we need to be really explicit and communicate to designers that this is what's happening. But why even burden designers on these tasks if if at the end of the day, it's not going to cause them any pain or pleasure. It's just a thing that happens for cleanup. But you have to be, that puts a lot of onus on you that it ain't going to break. It ain't going to cause any issues. You got to really make sure that your tooling is legit. It doesn't work 99.999% of the time. It just works 100% of the time. So there is a responsibility and a level of rigor that you need to bring to the table if you're going to take that approach, because the last thing anyone wants is some tool to just start screwing up the designs that you've been working on for the last, the last week. That's not a happy place.
I think there's a big reason why seeing, Figma presentations or internal design system presentations at your company that most of your team's artifacts should look the same. And there's a reason for that consistency. It's so all of our work comes collectively from our team. And there should be no reason why certain artifacts should be created differently because some designer wanted to put their flavor on it, their flair. We want to create these rules, guidelines, and an automation to help folks move faster.
Yeah, I don't think we're there yet, but I do think what we're trying to do is have a custom approach generate a real decision fork in the road. If there's no design system and there's no efficiencies associated with it, if I'm doing a cost benefit analysis inside and saying like, what's the cost associated with creating something custom? If it's the same effort than using the system, I can completely understand why someone would create something custom. Well, I think this is a little bit better. It's a little, I'm more comfortable with it. This is how I typically work. Why would I ever do the other thing if it's not benefiting me or my team or the work that I'm doing? If you can start to inject measurable efficiencies, now all of a sudden there is a fork in the road that people have to go through and say, do I want to spend the extra time it takes to make something custom? Do I believe in it that much to incur the extra time and overall attention it takes to get it to that point? Or do I want to leverage something that's going to help me get to that finish point faster? So that's where we're currently at, is we're just trying to create decision forks in the road to where there is now a real cost benefit decision that people have to make between using the design system and creating something custom.
Yeah, I want to flip this and get this out of the design tool a little bit. And I forgot to mention this sort of thread, so we could bring it up now. We had a previous podcast about support, and I believe you said you use Slack for your messaging. I got really into at Disney creating Slack bots. There's a variety of different Slack bots for different things. So I think sometimes Slack bots can be seen as disingenuous when you try to use them in a different way, maybe to get like more prompts on like, what are you doing, PJ? Like, let's share some, like, what's your favorite music? And I didn't use it for that. I use it for some legit reasons, like asynchronous stand-up. I was using Slack bots for that. I was using Slack bots for reminders to come to office hours. So that would trigger. And it would also trigger people for the office hours that had like signup sheets, trigger people to go into the signup sheet that, submit their questions and things that they wanted to review. And at Meta, very similar. So one thing that we've been sort of playing with is, so we have like a support group. How can we use automation to then automatically create tickets and tasks for us to come back to? So like if you say hashtag Figma question, then it could create a task specifically for a Figma question. So we're really trying to cut off the idea of just folks coming to a singular person source of truth. So it becomes very brittle when folks are just coming to you, PJ, or coming to me to answer questions. It's much more tenable for someone to ask the Gestalt group or the Geodesic group and have the work distributed. And how can we automate taking in those questions and being able to come back to them? So that was one thing that I thought was extremely interesting, just to automate requests and support. That was a big lift for us.
I love that. And that's not something that I think our team has leveraged as much as we could. We have a few Slack bots here and there, but nothing of profound use. I think even just finding a way to archive Slack conversations. So if you are answering a question in Slack and it gets really into the nitty-gritty details, can you easily record that in a place that will be forever or at least archivable? Because finding things in Slack is, you know, no one pretends that it's yeah, there you go. That's a clear way of saying it. So, I mean, immediately I'm just thinking like, hey, this is a really important conversation. Tag it in a place to where there's some centralized repository of threads that we can go back to. I guess you could pin it or save it in Slack, but that would be super interesting.
Yeah, if you could create a ticket and then the body of your ticket would be just automated part of that message. Because like a lot of times people say, yo, PJ, quick question. I'm going to thread this. And then they'll thread and just start asking you, like, what's your life story? Like, how did you, like, what version of Photoshop did you start using?
No one's interested in my life story, Davey. I never get that. No one's interested, and understandably so. I'm not interested in my life story. But no, I hear you. I think, and also the challenge is you ask one person and they have, you know, part of the information, or, you know, like, or another person didn't even think they had that question in their mind, but they decided not to ask it. If it's in a public space, then they can also, it just creates more visibility and benefits more people. So that is something that we definitely advocate for. Hey, just, it's not that I don't want to talk to you. I just want to talk to you in this public space so that we can get other points of view on it. And also potentially other designers have the same questions and they'll have that resolved for them as well.
Extending that, just thinking about being able to generate questions and answers, and maybe this will go directly to your doc site, to like an FAQ or something. Like, it'd be great to sort of do that. And a big reason why one of our designers, Felix, was telling me, like, a big reason why we're channeling people through this specific mechanism, whether it's through the bot or through a form, is like we could track over time how many people are going to be asking these similar questions, right? And there's data, and you could say, oh, this half we're getting way less questions about this FAQ that we used to get. So I think there's a lot of that sort of cost savings, but also planning, being able to plan ahead and say, we're getting less questions and less churn on these specific topics because we answered this certain way this half. So it builds on like the half planning sort of thing. Yeah.
I love it. I wish we had the bandwidth to have someone really, really go deep into our Slack support channels to the point where every question is tagged with a, you know, on a specific topic. So if it's an icon question or a pattern question, that it's categorized and archived and we can start to see patterns. I would love if our team could focus in on that. We have zero time to do it. But I think honestly, especially at scale, if one's Slack support group is just a waterfall of questions and support requests, I think it could really benefit you to start doing some pattern recognition, start abstracting some of these questions, recurring questions, put it into the docs, find ways to start to institutionalize the answers. That's, man, you got me thinking that would be an awesome thing to work on in the future. Yeah.
The exciting part about this is that if you had, let's say you had budget, right, to do this for next half, like design infrastructure improvements, plugin improvements, automation, and you're able to do this, so audit and do the pattern recognition, the roadmap builds itself. it's very easy. And then you sort of couple that with developing an understanding of how designers are working, what their pain points are, frustrations, et cetera. And then it becomes a very easy story to rectify. It's not easy in terms of the level of effort. The level of effort is very high, but it becomes very extremely tactical how you're going to get from point A to point B.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we're starting to run against time. I think that's a worthwhile topic to bring up, that even the best tool needs to have someone that understands how to use it and also has people to maintain it and keep it running. And that's typically, at least from my experience, that's typically where things start to get screwy. It's really easy to build tools, super easy. It's really hard to maintain them, keep them up to date, provide the support. And so, you know, you build this amazing tool for archiving and categorizing Slack conversations. You still need someone to use it, to be on the hook for utilizing it. And you still got to make sure it's running. And if there's downtime or something breaks, you got to have the expertise and the bandwidth to actually address it. And that's the thing that's tough to budget for. The building is the easy part. The keeping it online is not so much. Yeah. Justifying that it's still worth investing in.
Yeah. Keeping it online, executing it properly, and continuing to maintain.
Like, how many people are using it? You know, how much value is it bringing? Why are we continuing to maintain this versus something else? And so that's all the hidden cost associated with making one of those things. It's like having a kid. Great. You have a kid. It's perfectly on theme since you're heading to number two. You bring this child into the world, and now you have to feed them, bathe them, give them shelter, love them. And so that's all the stuff that's taken all the time, you know, for the next 25 years, who knows? If I had my druthers, 35 years. And so how do you budget for that? And how do you make the case for dedicated headcount to continue to work on these things in perpetuity?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I'll wrap with this. A lot of, I think some of these concepts you could explore and say a hackathon. You mentioned off, you know, before we chatted, a hackathon that might be going on soon for you. But a lot of these ideas, these good ideas, seem to come from either design or engineering based, you know, hackathons. And the true trouble with hackathons in general is like follow through of those said projects. So there's a shit ton of good ideas, but the good ideas that bubble up to the top, how can you continue, like you said, to maintain them and, you know, put a point of contact on that to watch over. It's not a continuous maintenance that's going to take 20% every half, but it's just someone monitoring this thing to make sure that it's still on rail. So I sort of see that as like a hackathon problem.
100%. People know when something is kind of getting dusty and not super supported. People totally can tell. And what do they typically do? They stop using the thing. The minute things aren't working perfectly great and like support requests start taking a little bit longer to respond to, now all of a sudden it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. And we don't want to invest this thing because we don't think people are going to use it. Now that you didn't invest it, people ain't going to use it. And so that's the challenge is the only way you can, in my opinion, the only way you can ensure regular, consistent use of your tooling is to give it the regular and consistent love that it needs to stay up to date and to meet people's needs how they expect it.
Yeah, so this was another good one. This may have been one of our longest ones, the best one yet.
Are you kidding me? You're right. Jeez.
Yeah, we're at 37 minutes. After I edit it down, it might just be
5. Just edit everything out that PJ says.
A little over 30, but still. Yeah. But thank you, PJ, for another good one. And thanks for listening, everyone.
Thank you.